Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to see you again.
Same though.
We need you to get a better internet connection, man. You're famous on YouTube. You can't be famous on YouTube and have a bad internet connection. It just doesn't add up.
Well, we've got, unfortunately, my neighborhood's got a monopolist. So he's doing less than enough to update his software and his hardware. So I've
and you don't have there's no Starlink.
Well, we've got our own Starlink going up. So
oh really?
Yeah. We've got 20 something satellites or 30 satellites up already, and they're popping them up pretty quick.
Oh shit!
So you know we can now sponsor revolutions in other countries just like the U.S.
Yes, good.
France and the U.K. need to be ready. You know they can't switch their crowds off. They can piss them off, but they can't switch them off. Well, I guess these guys for a while.
They don't make anything. Something we talk about. It's obviously the Iran war. We haven't spoken in a while, so we'll talk about the Iran war, The latest developments since we last spoke. And then at the end, we kind of talk a bit about Ukraine and Russia, because there's a lot of developments there and how that fits into the bigger picture. Cool, man. Okay. You good to go live? Not live. It's recorded, so not live. All right, cool, man.
Do you want to talk about Trump's Trump's most glorious vacation in China?
Of course, yeah. We'll talk about that also. That's a fun one to talk about.
They actually didn't even take half the Tajik flags down.
Hold on, Tajik, what? Sorry, 2 seconds. What, Tajik flags?
Yeah, well, the president of Tajikistan was visiting with he the same day Trump was flying in. And as a fact, while Trump was landing, the president of Tajikistan was still there. And as he was driving in, apparently they only changed like half the flags to U.S. flags from the Tajik flags. So
I swear.
It's a soft insult to put you in your place. Yeah, the Chinese are good at that. They choreograph all of that.
Is there also there's people talking about Xi having welcomed Kim Jong-un and Putin at the tarmac in the airport previous meetings? Some people said, no, it's not true, and it's protocol they got. 100% they did. No.
It's the MAGA guys trying to ration it away. No, he meets them at the tarmac. They sit down in his last time Putin was there, they sat down in his convertible, the top down in the back seat, drove into the city. Oh, yeah, that, absolutely. Well, the previous time Trump showed up, he had him waiting. Here, let me switch my VPN off. It'll help.
Do you say she had Trump awaiting the first time Trump visited?
Well, the last time Trump visited, he had him waiting. However you pronounce that.
XI.
Yeah, he had him waiting. So
let's talk about that meeting. What's your analysis of the meeting and how it went?
It didn't go any better than, I'd say Anchorage. It was unprepared. There was nothing, the way you normally do these kinds of meetings is, I mean, this is a serious level of meeting. Now, Xi sometimes comes over to Moscow, Putin comes over to Moscow, to China, and they'll have more of a buddy meeting, but they meet a lot, right? And they have a different, relationship. But when you have countries like this, or Russia coming to the U.S., U.S. coming to Russia, or the Soviet Union before that, or when you with China, or any major countries, you normally send out teams about 2 months ahead of time. First, you send out the security teams that figure everything out, because there's conflicts this time around with Trump security. They wanted to go armed where they weren't allowed to go armed. So there was no coordination that was done for that. One, two. The diplomats go in, the actual working diplomats go in, and they get all the points out. They negotiate everything except maybe the very key points. They prepare documents. They prepare possible joint statements. Everything's prepared. Then the heads meet. They greet and greet. They say nice words about each other. They debate. Maybe they negotiate on something or other. But the points, the agenda is already there, what they want to discuss. And then if already they had worked toward making a joint declaration or signing something, it's all prepared. It's very, very, very structured. When especially if the country is a somewhat adversarial, it's very structured. There's nothing. This is the same thing as when Putin arrived in Anchorage. Trump needed him in Anchorage fast because Trump needed a picture. Trump needed the PR. This is the same thing. Trump was planning on coming a month earlier. I guess he wanted to throw the severed heads of Venezuela and Iran on the table and say, "La, we've got your energy. Now you're good. So we're going to tell you how you're going to run."
Yeah, that. Yeah, I thought that as well.
Well, they got Venezuela. Venezuela is a you know, we talk about a cat in a bag. It's a dead cat. Venezuela can't produce more than 800,000 barrels a day. That's nothing. It could.
They can build it up a fair bit long term.
Yeah, yeah. Just $100 billion in about 5 years, and the U.S. companies aren't willing to invest that right now. They've always said, you know, if the government wants to do it, yeah, sure, we'll come in. And Trump's talking about giving them $40-50 billion loans, you know, 0% loans. But either way, yeah, I mean, look, you put the investment in, yes, you could do it. You could get it up to 3, 4, maybe 5 million barrels, maybe even higher. But you need time. The crisis is here. That's the problem. U.S. imports more than it exports, A. B, U.S. exports light sweet crude, but most of its refineries are set up for heavy sour crude, which is the stuff that's coming out of Venezuela. It's heavy because it's viscous. Sour because it has a lot of sulfur in it. So there's separate processes to clean it up. I mean, you can dilute it some for certain process. Problem is the U.S. hasn't built a new refinery in over 30 years. Try building a refinery in America. There's a reason all these companies have left the U.S. It wasn't just because pay for employees. It's because of the bureaucracy. It's because insane environmental laws. I mean, seriously, a lot of these laws are absolutely insane.
Which companies left the U.S.? Sorry, what are you referring to?
Industry. Most of the manufacturing.
Oh, manufacturing.
Yeah, I mean, just if you look at it, just to get insurance. So you have to have workman comps insurance for anybody that's working, right? Workman comps insurance, it's state. Every state has its own list, basically the friends of the governor. How else it works. The insurance is a percentage of the salary dependent on the job. So if you have people working in the office, you pay 5%, equivalent of 5% of their salary on insurance. So if they make $100,000, you're paying $5,000 for their insurance. Mandatory insurance for on-the-job coverage. That's if they're office workers, software developers, clerks, accountants, whatever. They work in an office. Now, worst thing is maybe, you know, they might drop a laptop on their foot or, you know, get a paper cut, fall down the stairs. But you go into a factory setting, it's 70-75%. So if you got a guy who's making $100,000 on the factory floor, you have to pay another $70,000 just to cover his insurance. And that's not counting taxes and everything else. So that's why that's one of the reasons a lot of factories leave the U.S. It's good to have an office because it's much cheaper, but to have a factory, it's easier to go somewhere else. You get three times as many people.
Just going back to the China visit. So you're saying he wanted to go earlier. It's a very good point. Wanted to go earlier and have the two winds controlling the energy flow to China, saying, "Hey, I've got Iran now and I've got Venezuela. Let's talk about rare earth and let's get concessions from you." Instead, now he went there saying, Venezuela, but I need your help with Iran. I'm pretty screwed there. And obviously impossible to get Chinese concessions now. If anything, it seems, based on his interview with Fox, it seems that Trump is one that may have conceded something when it comes to Taiwan. There's indications of that.
Pretty
shocking.
I cannot remember her name. One second, I'll look it up. The head of the Taiwanese opposition party, which is actually the party that Kai Sun-chek started, the dictator, the nationalist dictator. His party, their party rep went to China about 2 months ago to have a meeting with Xi, and they want reunification because Taiwan is not a separate nation, and it has never really claimed. There's the people the U.S. back are separatists, but the majority have never claimed. They just said, we'll reconquer the communists. We're nationalists. We'll reconquer that. Well, that never happened. And the communists aren't communists either. They're communists in name only. They're more state capitalism at this point, which a lot of countries are. So, they want reunification. Even what the name of the army of Taiwan is? The Chinese Republican Army. Chinese Republican Army. They don't deny they're Chinese. A lot of them want reunification.
The country, right? Hold on. Isn't the country's formal, country's formal name is Republic of China, isn't it? It's not Taiwan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's the whole point. This is, they don't deny they're, for the most part, they have radicals of the U.S. backs because they want to create a new Ukraine. But, you know, how they would supply that Ukraine, the Chinese version of Ukraine, is it's impossible across the fleet, the sea, the U.S. You know, it's one thing when you have a land border. Well, it's just smaller, just getting there. Yeah, 5,000 kilometers across open water where Chinese subs are going to be looking and Chinese missiles are going to be flying.
So but on the counterpoint as well, it's also much harder for China to invade it compared to Russia, Ukraine. So it goes both ways.
It is. It is. But, you know, back in, what was this? I was still on active duty. So this is back around 2002 or 2003. There was a study done by the U.S. War College on the possibility of supporting Taiwan. And they basically, by that point, this was 20 years ago. They said by that point, you know, if the U.S. Fleet came in anywhere between China and Taiwan, they'd just be sunk.
I've heard that all the war games showed that that obviously China would win in a war on Taiwan. Now, the strategy on the American side is not to win against China; it's to make the invasion so costly that China would not do it. That's the strategy.
Well, China's not planning on doing it. That's the whole point. The actual strategy is to get China to invade. The whole point is to get China to invade, just like the whole point was to set up Ukraine as a battering ram against Russia to get the war going as a proxy war, which Marco Rubio admitted is a proxy war on the news. He came out and said, yeah, this is a proxy war. They're trying to act like he never said that, but he did to the media. He said that about a year
ago. When did he say?
About a year ago, flat out, he said on an interview, this is a proxy war. This is when back when...
It's nothing, not that big of a... Okay, everyone knows that. It's not that big of a thing.
I know. So. Everybody knows
like
it, but nobody
Iran, it's like saying Iran. It's like saying China supplying weaponry or material to Iran.
Actually, the main one supplying weaponry and material to Iran right now is Russia. Why, you know, this blockade is pointless because, you've got four ports on the Caspian that are working overtime with the Russian ports. B, you've got a rail line through Pakistan to China. And C, you've got that, by the way, is also running oil on the railways. And C, you've got regular Iranians who are buying up oil in barrels and just driving them up, to the Pakistani border and selling them there.
But it's just much smaller volumes. Like I looked at the numbers,
it's
significantly smaller than the Strait of Hormuz. But they do have that float, the capacity to have floating storage, and they do consume a lot of the oil themselves internally. So they kind of got, they've got various, and they're working on expanding. They're coming up with unique ways, and I'm not an expert in this, in being able to export more through the land routes, which are not equipped to. But they're increasing the capacity. But obviously, it's impossible to verify the exact numbers.
And the other thing that they're doing, Iran's weakness has always been refining. It's gotten worse now because of the war, but Iran has never had enough diesel. It's got the oil, but, you know, it's just like the U.S. The U.S. can't refine enough fuel to feed itself. It has to import about 2 million barrels a day of refined product, 2.5 million barrels a day. That's where prices go up. In the U.S., because the U.S. Still imports refined product. Same thing with Iran.
The U.S. imports, from what I understand, they import the crude oil and then they export the refined.
Well, they do both. The problem with the U.S. Is, again, the majority of U.S. Refineries in the South were set up for Venezuelan oil because Venezuela was a colony effectively for, well, it's kind of becoming one again. Before Chavez took over. And then Chavez won his own way. You know, of course, Venezuela, they did some very stupid things. For example, they kept the reserves in the U.S. in gold, which if you're at odds with the U.S., why the hell would you keep your reserves there? That's one. And this is a fault of both sides. Chavez and Maduro, they took out a lot of money out of the oil industry for the social projects. But they took out so much money, they didn't have enough money to reinvest in upgrading and repairing the infrastructure. On the flip side, the U.S. confiscated the reserves, and the U.S. Wouldn't allow export equipment that was U.S. equipment that's running the oil fields, and they wouldn't allow export of equipment to replace worn-out equipment. So now you're at 800,000 barrels a day, and you really can't stretch it any further without the whole system collapsing. Yeah, it's not a matter of repairing. It's a matter of replacement. The equipment's just worn out at this point. So that's one of the reasons there's no quick fixes. Venezuela is a large investment for the next 3 to 5 years, at least, to get at any significant volume. The problem is the crisis is here. We're in the middle of the crisis.
And they can't increase capacity to what's needed, obviously far from it. Going back to that meeting with Xi, so Trump came in much weaker. He's kind of thrown Taiwan in a way under the bus. But we'll see. You know, sometimes he says things and later, you know, Greenland, we're going to invade it. And then he just moves on and forgets about it. So it's hard to
I don't know if he's forgotten about it yet.
Yeah, true.
Greenland is on the back burner. We may come back to that yet.
So what do you make of that meeting? Unprepared. Talks about some business deals, but nothing too significant. Some nice words from China, at least according to the White House. On China accepting, saying there should not be a fee on the Strait of Hormuz, and they'll buy American oil to diversify from the Strait of Hormuz. Actually, what do you make of that particular statement that came out of the White House that Xi agreed to buy American oil to diversify from Hormuz, and that Iran should not charge a fee at the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, first of all, Iran doesn't charge China any fees. Let's begin with that.
No, but they didn't say China; they said in general. They weren't specific.
Well, you know, until you hear it from the Chinese, they've agreed to buy or they've agreed to do something. It's just like Trump's, they're going to buy 200 of our planes.
Boeing, yeah.
Boeing, thank you. God, good Lord. So they said, we're going to buy 200 of our, they're going to buy 200 Boeings, which is funny because they just signed an agreement with Airbus. They didn't say anything of that sort. They were going to buy anything. So, again, it's one thing, Trump just, I don't know if he knows he's lying or if he just, because if you've ever met a pathological liar, I'm not saying he is, but I've served with a pathological liar and they absolutely believe the crap that comes out of their mouth. And some of the crap that comes out of their mouth, you're just looking at it, it's like, good God, man, you how do you not know this is crap? And they're like, no, they're convinced. You can't catch a pathological liar on any lie detectors because they're absolutely convinced in what they're saying. I don't know if Trump is, but he lies a lot and exaggerates a lot.
Yeah, that one came in. That one is a bit different. Came from the White House. So that's why I think it must have come through coordination with China. Now, China didn't say it. I do want to offer a caveat. We don't know how much American oil. I saw it as two ways, and my audience knows this. I'm like, either one is just China giving some political support to Trump because they really couldn't give him much more. Trump wanted more, they didn't. Trump wanted the commitments not to supply, not just words, but actual commitments not to supply Iran with weaponry, etc. And they might have refused, or some help with Iran seeking an off-ramp. So they're like, we'll give you some political support you can go back to MAGA with, but that's it. Or the other option is that Iran is being pretty extreme in their demands right now, a lot more than early on. They want to control the Strait of Hormuz in perpetuity, charge cable companies. They want lifting of sanctions, unfreezing of assets before they even discuss the nuclear program. Plus, they want reparations. So they want all these things where even China's like, look, guys, you won this war, but ask for some concessions, but you got to be reasonable, something that Trump can reasonably accept because Trump wants an off-ramp. So maybe China is siding with the U.S. only slightly to pressure Iran to meet the U.S. somewhere in the middle. That's like the two theories that I have in my mind kind of floating. One is just a bit of nothing, bit of fluff to support Trump because they gave him nothing significant strategically. Or the other one is actually a pretty significant strategic step to pressure Iran.
True. Some of the positions Iran wants are undoable. Reparations from the U.S., I think the average American Congress critter would rather eat his own liver than to vote that. Removal of sanctions is impossible for the same reason. Because Trump, no president in the United States can remove sanctions. He can postpone them. He can modify how much they're going to enforce them. But he can't remove them. Only the U.S. Congress can remove them. And the U.S. Congress is absolutely bought and paid by whatever special interests. Israel is probably the biggest, but it's not the only one. Everybody that wants to play pays the U.S. Congress, and those with very few exceptions, like people like Massey and Ron Paul, Rand Paul in this case, and Ron Paul when he was serving. Yeah, people like that are the honest brokers, but they're 10% or less. The other 90% are absolutely bought. They go there to get bought. They get bought before they actually come into their office from day one. I've known several members of former members of Congress, and the things they tell you, they lost their bids because they weren't bought. So they had big lobbies against them. That's not going to happen. Sanctions are not going to get lifted. They can get ignored, and the U.S. is good at ignoring sanctions when it needs it. Just like the U.S. will continue buying Russian uranium, Russian fertilizer, Russian oil products, no matter what the sanctions, because otherwise the U.S. gets screwed. Now, the Europeans, on the other hand, how dare you even think about it? Smack on the back of the head. Just like the U.S. has bought Russian LNG gas and resold to the Europeans at a 50% markup. Yeah, why not? If you're stupid enough to go for that, take that markup instead of just buying it from Russia, then you're stupid enough to pay. I don't feel any sorrow for the Europeans. That's something, stupid should hurt. Should hurt. And they're doing absolutely self-inflicted wounds. And that's not in the feet. They're shooting themselves in the gut. If they want to pay more, why not? Go ahead and pay more. That's how markets work. It's just like, you buy a T-shirt that has nothing on it, and you pay $5 for it, and you pay the same T-shirt with Gucci on it, and you pay $500 for it. It's the same friggin' T-shirt. So if they want to do the same thing with the oil, by all means, go bankrupt, go for it. You're adults, kinda, sorta. So from that point of view, sanctions can be bypassed by the very U.S. government, but they're not going to get lifted. As for the Straits of Hormuz, they're not international waters. I don't know why.
They want to control even the Omani side.
Well, the Omanis are allied with Iran.
They're not allowing. Right now, Oman is allowing. That hasn't installed any toll booth. So if there's any ships that are going through the Omani side, Iran is striking them. I'm not saying they don't have the right, because they've just been victims of a war, but they seem to want a long-term ability to charge a fee. And they want, not long term, sorry, a perpetual. That's the issue, perpetual, where even China's saying no, because then it just opens up a can of worms where the Danish Straits, they could do the same. Denmark and Sweden could do the same there. And then Russia would suffer from there. Malacca Straits, Indonesia and others would do the same. China would suffer. So it shakes up the global system that allowed countries to flourish.
The global system's gone. I mean, let's face reality. That global system's gone. The U.S. killed it. U.S. helped build it, and then the U.S. killed it, which it's done several times. WTO was one of those things. The moment it no longer fully served the U.S. Interest, they just killed it, basically. It's still there, but it's like one of those mass multiplayer games where the game's still running, just nobody's on the server. Two people are still running around in that server, but the game's still there. But, it's not really anybody cares about, what's up there. It's the same thing with the WTO and a lot of these things. Look, the U.S. grabbed the Panama Canal to try to control. The U.S. strategy right now is to try to control the four key choke points. Those would be the Red Sea, Panama Canal, Straits of Hormuz, because the U.S. was planning on taking over the Straits of Hormuz, and the Malacca Straits. The thing is, and this is what the great threat to America of China and the Road and Belt Initiative. Is to bypass all those straits, except for Panama, obviously. You've got the massive landmass called Eurasia and Africa that's all connected. And you don't need to go by sea. In fact, honestly, if you got high-speed rail, you're better off going by rail. The only thing the U.S. was fumbling around to produce something to woo countries back over, then they never did come up with anything. They had a couple ideas, but they never funded them. They never come up with them. So the best they could come up with revolutions and civil wars in the countries along the different routes. Yeah. And that only takes you so far. So look,
what do you make? China, China. Yeah, so China. Just on the China one, just because I'm really keen to get your thoughts. The two options that I mentioned. Is it to actually pressure Iran to concede a bit more so they can end the war there? Or is it just, hey, we can't give you anything, Trump, but here's a few nice words for you to take to MAGA? What's more likely?
Maybe something in the middle, even there. Of course, Iran wants everything peace and quiet. Iran, of course, Iran, China. Iran does too. In the end of the day, Iran was attacked, and it's still being attacked. I mean, this ceasefire is not exactly a full ceasefire. There's still issues and actions being taken from both sides, little raids and little things like that. But for China, of course, Chinese are very statist. They prefer a status quo whenever they can. They do
over,
not prefer
even if it's even over weakening the U.S. and Iran. So if the U.S. wants to continue the war in Iran, China prefers an end to the war, which means not weakening and depleting American stockpiles. Because that's pretty tempting as well.
American stockpiles are gone. I mean, we're looking at if Trump restarts this war, he's got maybe a week, 2 weeks max. Missile production is null and void, no matter what they're being promised. I mean, look, some magnets are still going to get through just because people do contraband, and there is a good chance of making a lot of money. And there's a good chance of getting shot, too, for it, for the effort. But the point is on a mass scale, they don't have what they need. It's going to take the U.S. 3 to 5 years to set up enough manufacturing just to cover its own weapon systems, let alone the electronics industry and everything else. And that's if they can push that through in states. Again, what I was saying, there's a lot of reasons industry left the U.S. State regulations is one of them. And the federal government can't do anything about that. They can pressure the states, but if the states don't want to re-regulate themselves, it's a whole different issue. So from that point of view, I mean, they didn't get the rare earth magnets. They didn't get those deals, not for the military anyways. And the Chinese do check if suddenly Samsung, because they've gone to Samsung before. I know it's not U.S. company, but the U.S., the CIA has gone and tried to work with Samsung, said, you know, order a bunch more magnets. Samsung, hell no. Because
so China, you're talking about Chinese restrictions from last year, from the trade war,
which are still in place, targeting
the U.S. military for U.S. military use.
Yeah, exactly. Dual purpose use. And Samsung said, hell no, because as soon as we up our orders, the Chinese already said, we're going to come and inspect it. Let's see all the electronics, civilian electronics, you put all that extra material in.
That's why Trump had Lula. Brazil's has a lot of rare earth.
Well, it's not rare. The problem, everybody's missing the problem. It's not rare earth. It's a refinery. U.S. has tons of rare earths. So every country.
But Brazil doesn't have refining capacity?
Nope. And Brazil doesn't have refining capacity for fuel either. They sold that off to the Saudis, unfortunately, and made a very big mistake in that. Out of the 17 rare earth elements, there's only two of them that are actually very, very rare. The rest are trace materials in other formations, but they're not that rare. The problem is it's a chemical or electrolysis process to get them out. Chemical bleaching out of different materials, electrolysis to get them out, bleaching that way. It's expensive, it's energy intensive, and there's a lot of byproduct, that needs to be recycled, clean, and so on. So to set up something like that in the U.S., you're going to get environmental study after environmental study. You're going to have people protesting. They're going to bring up issues. Now, this could stretch on for years. And there's nothing, unless it's built on federal property, which is, I guess, an option, but I don't think they've ever sure looked at that. Unless it's built on federal property and at the state level and then the local municipality level, they could delay this for years. And that's what happens with refineries. That's one of the reasons the U.S. can't build a new refinery, because it just gets delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. And people just go, I can use my money somewhere else than this crap. And they go build a refinery somewhere else. I mean, the U.S. shoots itself in the foot that way. It's because everything gets taken in extreme. So that's a problem. So, yeah, they didn't get that bonus. They didn't get the bonus from China of getting those rare earth minerals. And the Chinese, look, just the way the whole meeting came off, the fact that she wasn't at the airport to begin with. He was meeting with the president of Tajikistan. Half the flags along the route hadn't been changed to U.S. flags. There were still Tajik flags hanging. This is all soft indicator. You know, I won't say a direct insult, but it's that soft indicator of, yeah, you want to have some drinks? Want to eat some expensive Chinese food? You want to see some sights? No problem. And then go away. And that's exactly what the Chinese did. When Kim Jong-il arrives, Putin arrives, last time Putin arrived, she met him at the airport. They sat down in his convertible and with the top down drove into the city, basically hand in hand. that's the different level. And here you got a number two guy, one of the number two guys showing up to meet Trump, not the number one guy. Number one guy standing at the Palace of the People on the steps, like the owner, like the big honcho. You come to me, you shake my hand. And that's all soft power plays at that point. It's the same thing as, you know, when Trump won and Vucic from Serbia came to Trump, and they put Vucic, they Trump sitting at the in the Oval Office at the desk, they put Vucic's chair.
Oh, Vucic's Serbia, yeah.
And it was it was a low chair. Vucic is a tall guy, but he's a low chair. So he's sitting there like, you know, like a school kid.
It in was front of so the funny. Yeah. Let me find a photo. It's
embarrassing as hell. Yeah, if I was in this place, I would have turned around, walked out, and gone, go to hell.
It was so funny, yeah.
But it's the same thing. The Chinese did basically the same thing.
Oh, my God.
And by the way, Trump, what Trump did to the leaders in Europe, I mean, it's the same thing.
And then didn't Trump say something? Didn't say, in that meeting, didn't Trump, there it is, that's Vucic on this side, yeah, on that small table. No, sorry, this side.
And well, they had one. That's when they were signing. But before that, they had a photo come out. Vucic just sitting right in front of the desk.
Of Trump. Oh my god, man! That is
in a lower chair. He's always sitting in a lower than Trump. Like, let me get a better resolution of it.
That is crazy.
That was embarrassing as hell. But
he got attacked so much back home.
Oh yeah, exactly. The delinquent school kid has showed up, and the director's going to smack him around.
Isn't there also a video of him saying something about Serbia, and then Vucic's like, I didn't sign this, and starts going through the agreement. Do you remember that or no?
Yeah.
So Trump says, we signed this and that, and we also signed this, and Vucic's like, looks at this guy, did I sign this? And starts going through the agreement, confused, like, I don't think I signed this. I can't remember the details of it. Before
the
digressing...
The only thing worse than that, was when Schulz shows up. Why? Because the master called and Schulz comes running over, and he's this is to Biden. So he comes running over. Then they normally come in a car with his that country's flags, and they came in an American car up to the White House, basically through the servants' quarters, and somebody audio taped them where Schulz is saying, you know, I'm glad to be of service to America. Like, Jesus. Man, this is
nothing like second. Nothing compares to the daddy to Trump, NATO's guy. Oh,
yeah, Rudy. It's pathetic. So, that's pathetic.
So what does that mean for the war in Iran? What's your analysis there? Are we seeing, because Trump is in a difficult spot? My analysis is he obviously wants to get the hell out of it, but Iran are in a very different mindset, and they've got a lot of demands. In a way, they're kind of telling Trump, just walk away. And then, you know, according to Robert Kagan and others, that could be his least bad option. However, the New York Times is saying next week is going to be a continuation of the war. The Israelis are saying we're locked and loaded, waiting for the go ahead. We probably think Trump will be dragged back into it. And he should and will strike their energy infrastructure, which means Iran will do the same in the Gulf. So it's honestly 50-50. I never thought I'd say this. I thought he'll just walk away. What's your take on it?
You know, first of all, the Israelis are driving this bus, like it or not. Madeleine Adelson, all these other donors, the APEC donors, they're, you know, you take their money, you're not going to turn away and leave. It's forced them going into a gang. You know, these gangs, the only way you leave is when you're dead. This is pretty much the same thing here. You can't turn around and say, here's your money back with a percentage, just leave me alone. No, they own your soul. Absolutely, I think Trump wants out. I don't think Trump actually really even wanted in, but he's in, whether he likes it or not. He wasn't going to risk his life to counter these people. So he's in. Like it or not, he's in. Iran, no matter what it says, would just prefer for the U.S. to leave. And I think at this point, even the Saudis and the Kuwaitis would just prefer the U.S. to leave. Just leave. The U.S. Fifth Fleet has left. The forward headquarters Fifth Fleet is now moving to Israel. They've announced they're moving to Israel. A lot of the equipment is in Israel. They've talked about – well, I don't know if it was an official announcement, but they've been talking about that. They're leaving.
Yeah.
They're going to relocate to look, you know, out of the 13 bases, there was an inspection done. They said 288 structures either damaged or destroyed. I mean, that's most everything there, you know. Yeah, so they've estimated up to $200 billion to replace everything. true or not, I don't know. You know, they didn't include me on the inspection board, so I can't say for sure. But that's the estimates I've been running, and between $100 and $200 billion. The US doesn't have that money. Let's just begin with that. They didn't get Trump didn't get his $200 billion to continue the war, so he's pulling this money out of other funds, out of existing funds for the military and for the military, out of other ministry or secretariats, departments. So he's got to come up with money somewhere for this. So there's a big problem, you know. It, plus the big problem for the U.S. military. I mean, the U.S. military already has people in Israel. They're on TDY, temporary duty assignment. It's very permanent temporary duty. So they're not officially there forever, but they're there for very long times. Now they're going to be there forever, basically, because it's no longer, you know, when the Fifth Fleet forward headquarters moves there, it's no longer, you know, a TDY. You can't say it's a TDY. So the problem for the U.S., by the way, is you're now inside the country committing genocide on three fronts. Well, guess what? Tell us you didn't know what's going on. You're now just as guilty. You're going to get painted with a tarred with the same brush. If you had any kind of deniability before that about what Israel is doing, and that was paper thin at that, you know, because sort of the U.S. is the one that, that gives Israel 2,000-pound bombs to level apartment buildings to supposedly kill somebody, except for all the civilians. You know, for Israel, collateral damage isn't collateral damage, bonus points. That's the whole problem there. Now, the U.S. is now absolutely in the middle of this. So try say you didn't know what's going on. Try say you're not a direct participant of the genocide. Nobody will believe you. So that there's that perception that what, one way or the other, that, that perception that the U.S. is not going to be able to shake on a world stage. But yeah, that's the point of this. The U.S. is already leaving the Persian Gulf, and that's the main aim for in Iran, is to oust the U.S. out of the Persian Gulf. And the U.S. was not really present in the Persian Gulf until Desert Storm. That's when the U.S. really got itself in there. That's when the U.S. convinced Saddam to invade Kuwait. I mean, they gave him all the green lights. And as soon as he did that, oh, well, buddy. Yeah, you're the aggressor, you're this or that. And they start building up. Saddam was just stupid enough to think.
What was? Can you remind me the story there? What was the, very briefly, what was the, I remember reading it a while ago. What was the indicators? What was the reason they wanted Saddam to invade Kuwait? What was the benefit for the U.S.?
It got into the Persian Gulf. The U.S. was pretty absent from the Persian Gulf. All of these bases, everything started coming out in the 90s after they got into the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Pre-positioned equipment there in Saudi Arabia, started opening up a lot more bases. That was
the... They vaguely told Saddam like not to invade Kuwait, but they kind of didn't give him the go-ahead, but kind of were very vague about it or something along those lines.
Oh, they said, Saddam, we don't give a damn.
Yeah.
You see, I mean, Rumsfeld fed Saddam with chemical weapons through the French. The U.S. was the U.S. is who got Saddam to invade Iran in the first place to get this whole conflict going.
That makes more sense.
And because you know they need to get somehow at the mullahs in Iran. Carter got embarrassed, so they started pushing Saddam, and Saddam took the bait, and he sent, and they backed Saddam fully. With equipment and weaponry and intelligence, and we started this war. But Kuwait was the 19th province of Iraq previously, until the British drew some nice new lines. And Kuwait was slant drilling. So, yeah, the Kuwaitis were stealing Iraqi oil because they're slant drilling into
Iraq. Yeah, I heard that. They were drilling underground going into Iraqi territory. Yeah. That's what I've been told. That's confirmed?
That's confirmed. That they were absolutely doing that. You can slant drill up to 13 kilometers out, so you don't have to be right on the border to get into these formations. So, yeah, they were doing it. Absolutely, they were doing it. And there's the problem. Hey, can you hold 1 second?
Of course. No, cat, go.
My cat's trying to get out of one of the bedrooms, and he's jumping out the door. Yeah, of course. I'll take a quick bite. Second. Yeah, he jumps. He jumps at the handle to try to open it, but it's like slams. He'll eventually do it, but it's slams. Like, jeez.
The OCD was kicking in.
Yeah. So I mean, they convinced Saddam to do it, and then when Saddam did it, when he actually went for it, he asked Washington, "We don't give." Kuwait was an extremely anti-American country at that point. They're one of the leading anti-American countries. So yeah, we don't care. They're not our friends and all that. But then Saddam took that bait and got that hook right in there, and he just went in, grabbed Kuwait, and pawa, and everything goes. Oh, we it's an illegal invasion. They got a UN. They got UN permission. They had I'm not even sure how many countries were in there. And this is still during the Cold War. And Saddam was being supported by both the U.S. and the Soviet Union at that point. Even Syria was in the coalition. I mean, everybody was in the coalition. That's what the U.S. used as its entry into the Gulf, and it's been building up ever since. So Iraq, Iran, and allied now with Iraq, and Yemen, their job is to drive the U.S. out, and they basically already did.
Will they be able to drive them out, or do you think Trump will be dragged in and try to force a win? That's the escalation trap. Will he get into that escalation trap, you think, or he'll be able to walk away despite the loss and make it look like a win?
No, he could make it look like a win for his base.
Obviously, he's already done that. Most of his base believes he won.
He lost more than half of his base because the people actually vote, the real MAGA people, the people that voted, hey, take care of America's issues, no wars and all that. Those the real MAGA people, they all left. The people, the quote MAGA now are basically groupies. They're cult fanatics. No matter what Trump says, it's like God. When you have a golden statue of Trump that was anointed by these Christian Zionist preachers, I mean, the golden calves or anything like that. Oh, no, it's a golden Trump, so it doesn't count. This is ludicrous. I mean, you go, gee, good God, man, but this is real. So you've got that issue now. Those people would believe anything Trump said, but that's not the problem. They don't drive the train. The people driving the train sit in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem, whatever you want to call it. And they're driving the train, and no, they're not going to let Trump out. So I think he's going to wind up going back in. I think the hostilities are going to break out sometimes. See, she basically told him, if you start the sub, don't even bother coming to China. So Trump couldn't do anything until he went to China. Now he's been coming back from China. Yeah, I think it probably will restart. Unfortunately for everyone, including the U.S., it will restart. Things are not going to get better. Economically, we are in the middle of a tsunami. It's only getting worse. It's only going to continue to get worse. Qatar is out for the next 5 years to repair all the damage that's already done. That means that fertilizer is gone off the market for years to come. Fertilizer prices already doubled. So wait till the early harvests come in June. That's when prices start spiking, or if not skyrocketing. That extra gas is gone for years to come. The oil is not as badly damaged, but it's still, look, the Saudis, and by the way, the Israelis have a vested interest to make sure this conflict is going, not just because they want to destroy Iran. They want all the shipping stopped out of the Persian Gulf. 2 years ago, or maybe it was 3 years ago, we had the genocider in chief, Netanyahu, up in the UN going with a map. This is the dam, which was basically Iran, Iraq, Turkey, the promised land with a pipeline going from the Persian Gulf that he drew this red line through Israel. So, he's laid out his plan. He needs, but for these pipelines to be emergency built, he needs the regular access points destroyed or the facilities, loading facilities so damaged nobody can do anything with them. So he's got a vested interest, and it doesn't, believe you me, he doesn't care how many Arabs or Persians or anybody else dies in that area. It's absolutely irrelevant to that man. He's swimming neck deep in blood as it is. Once a few more million people are dead, it's at this point. Then if they kill each other in a conflict he helped instigate, that's even better. And I think the Saudis have seen this, the writing on the wall. but the UAE.
All Gulf countries. Even I think even the UAE, most people disagree with me, but based on discussions I've had, even the UAE has. But their decision, if the UAE does not end up, because I'm sure they're pissed because they've been attacked the most, but if they don't end up improving relations with Iran, I think that will be one of the biggest strategic mistakes they make. They need that stability and security. And I think they will.
Absolutely.
I could be proven wrong. I've been wrong many times before. I really think they will. I think all the Gulf will come together, even Bahrain, all of them will come together. I think that's the only way forward. And I also think this is the beginning. I'm not sure about Trump getting back into this war. I've been saying for a while it's over, even before the ceasefire. I'm like, guys, it's going to end. Trump's going to walk away. But considering the Iranian demands and their stance on things and their rhetoric, I'm like, shit, they're egging you. Like, it's like, I dare you. I dare you. Hit me. I dare you. That's the Iranian side.
Well, they are saying that. But for them, you know, the best thing, even no matter what demands they're putting out there, the best thing that for them is for Trump to just walk away. And I think they're doing it. They're making the demands at that level that Trump will just go, you know, and Trump sort of said, I'm bored with this. Well, yeah, he does have a short attention syndrome. He's bored with it. Walk away. That's what the Iranians want. Insane. But the Israelis don't.
He walks away. You know how massive of a win that is for Iran if he walks away?
Oh, yeah.
That is
Iran's
wild.
A regional superpower.
That is wild. And I think Israel's days of being of having that impunity, I've said this a lot, of having that impunity in the region, this is the beginning of the end for it. And that's why they're kind of grasping at the straws, trying to get as much as they want. Not saying it's Israel's going to be destroyed, etc., as some people are saying. I'm like, no, Israel will remain a big superpower in the region, but not the only superpower. And there'll be, I think Iran will be the second big, another big one. Obviously, it's Turkey, Saudi, but the Gulf may come together as well. So, because they have to, as a deterrent against Iranian aggression, but also improve relations with Iran. So we'll kind of see a block, the Gulf block, even though it's not looking realistic now, especially with the split that we're seeing within the Gulf, especially Saudi and the UAE. But I think they'll come together because that's what makes the most sense. Iran doesn't need a block, and they'll improve relations with the Gulf. And both sides have shown willingness to do that, except the Emiratis. I haven't seen it yet, but I think we'll see it. And thirdly, Israel, I think, would maintain its influence in the region just a lot less.
If the U.S. pulls, you see, I think that Trump more likely, maybe, depending on who the Democrats run next. But Israel's days of influencing the U.S. are numbered. They're going to go down quite a bit.
Yes.
Because they've had to force it so hard. I mean, they've lost. It's not just they've lost American, you know, Christians or whatever. The young generation of Jews in America are anti-Israel. They've lost. Lost everybody. Oh yeah, yeah. Look who's leading a lot of these demonstrations for the Palestinians. Are Jews up front? Now they've got, you know, not in my name. Those T-shirts. Those are Jews. Those are American Jews. And for That's traditional insane. Jews, you know, if you look at it, just like for Christians, the Christian Zionists are heretics. Flat out, they're absolute heretics. They have very little in common with actual Christianity, except maybe a name. And there's, I mean, I can give you theological reasons for that. There's plenty of them. But for traditional Jews, the Zionist Jews are heretics. Because traditional Judaism considers that they've been punished by God, and they cannot, while they can exist in the promised land, and they have, and they always have, they cannot rule it until the Messiah comes. And then he'll gather them together in their promised land. So to build any government and call it Israel is absolute heresy. And traditional Jews will probably have to. The Jews living in working and serving in the military of Iran are traditional Jews. This is one of the reasons, you know, when that one Christian Zionist preacher on Pascha or Easter, Catholic Easter. Or Protestant Easter in this case, and Trump's little Easter party comes out there. Yeah, the Iranians want to kill all the Jews. Well, except for the Jews that are in Iran, except Living for the Iran, Jewish politicians who are, I mean, Jews, just like Christians and Zoroastrians, have a representation in the Iranian parliament. And that synagogue that Israel blew up in the middle of Tehran, the reason they blew it up, one of the congregants there is an Iranian general. He's Jewish. He's an Iranian general. So there's welcome to reality. I mean, it's an Islamic republic, but it has constitutional guarantees for all minorities, religious and ethnic.
People, when I tell them, and they're telling them, when you say to them there's Jews in Iran, they'll be like, no, are they alive? Are they okay? It's crazy, people's misconception about the region.
Oh, yeah.
And like, believe me. They're fine. The synagogue was bombed, but they're fine. Oh, these IRGC bombed their synagogue. I knew it. No, Israel bombed it.
Oh yeah, people are, you know, near there, there's like over 660 churches working. So when they're like, oh yeah, we're sneaking Bibles into Iran. Really? Why don't you just go to a store and buy some? There are Armenian churches, Orthodox churches, Catholic churches. I mean, I think there might be some Protestant churches. I mean, for God's sake, it's not that hard to find one. As a matter of fact, I haven't been to Iran yet. I was supposed to go right before the war started, but that broke down for obvious reasons, security issues. They didn't bring us in. I'm hoping to go sometime soon. Yeah. But I've seen the photos. I've been sent the photos. They opened up a new metro station right below the biggest Armenian church in Tehran. And it's all dedicated to the Virgin Mary with Christian symbolism, etc. And you're looking at that, you know, and, oh yeah, they hate Christians, except for, yeah, how does that fit into? I mean, they've got Zoroastrians, which are not even people of the book. They're a very tiny minority. I mean, it used to be the religion of Persia at one point, but I mean, they're a very small minority, but they've got representation in parliament. They may only have one voice, but, you know, find minorities. With look at the Saudis. Find a minority representation in the Saudi parliament. Oh, is there a Saudi parliament?
Something here.
Exactly. And I love this.
No, you just cut off.
Come on.
No, the perfect time. There we go. Oh, you're back.
Yeah. It's just like, was it Morandi was taking apart this British journalist in quotes. And she's like, yeah, well, you've got an apartheid state. Your women have to wear the veil. Like, well, first of all, that would be scarf.
Okay, whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, most half Iranian women probably more don't, or they just wear it very loosely because the laws have been very liberalized. And the veil and the burqa.
That's not what an apartheid state anyway is, but okay.
Right.
And the hijab, exactly. Is the hijab. The Muslim scarf is
called hijab. Right. It's a hijab. But they don't they don't have to wear that by law anymore. There's no religious police running around forcing it. But yeah, by the way, guess where there is? You know, that there'll be U.S. allies, the Saudis, where women are property, quite literally.
The bullshit, their propaganda there. Man, I love our conversations, how it flows so well. You've got way too much information in that mind of yours, man. I enjoyed it as always. We should do it live next time. We'll get the. I know we can't use StreamYard, but we'll have to get the right software for it. I told the team so we do it live. But yeah, man, good to see you again. Waited too long for it, but we've got to do it again soon.
Yep. No problem.